You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Evenings here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and across the world. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick Dibano and Athos Syrianos once again this evening. And boys, what a massive piece of news that finally broke after all that waiting this morning. Keisuke Honda will play in Melbourne Victory colours this coming A-League season. And the excitement levels, at least in this room, are pretty high, boys.
I am so excited. I love Keisuke Honda. You know, I think he's one of my favourite. No, genuinely, being a former Milan player as well, he does hold a special spot in my heart. I think even though he wasn't at his best, but, you know, he's one of those guys that really excite me that's coming to the A-League. I haven't been this excited about a marquee in a very long time. Especially because he can really hit a free kick and get behind the ball. I reckon that's part of the reason why I'm so excited.
Nick Dibano here, I can back that up. He's not just a Honda bandwagoner. He was frothing over him even before the World Cup started. So if you listen to some of our World Cup preview shows, it was Honda this, Honda that. I'm saying, you know, he's getting on. He's not that mobile.
I told you so.
And he was an impact player for Japan at this World Cup, so he can still do it at the very highest level. A shudder to think what he can do in the A-League this coming season, Athos.
And what makes the acquisition all the more sweeter is Victory is playing Asian Champions League, and it's the first time Keisuke Honda will play in the Asian Confederation since 2007. So you can only imagine the scenes should Victory draw a Japanese team in their group, and that away leg over in Japan, it'll be mayhem. And even in Melbourne, it'll be great to see some real decent crowds for the Asian Champions League games, because that's a box Victory hasn't quite ticked as of yet.
I'm so pumped. I'm so excited. I woke up this morning and I saw that it was going to be announced at 10 a.m. You know, I had the screen on.
I wonder what this is.
I was thinking, is this going to be like some sort of sponsorship advertisement? Nah.
You weren't thinking that.
I didn't think it'd be a sponsorship advertisement for the car brand Honda. Like, is this a new sponsorship? But I think it's a great bit of business from the Melbourne Victory to get Keisuke Honda, not just in terms of a marquee position, not just in terms of drawing in crowds, but in terms of what they will achieve tactically and on the field. If you want to get someone to defend your championship, if you want to make an upgrade from Leroy George, you found your man and a guy who's still at the peak of his powers. We don't have to worry about someone who's washed up or someone who's past his prime. He's in his peak of his prime right now, and he will come to the A-League whether he's playing as a 10, a winger, a false 9, and he will dominate.
And we will be speaking to Victory CEO Trent Jacobs very shortly about this tremendous acquisition. And of course, you can let us know your thoughts, Victory fan or not, about Keisuke Honda, 9944 999903 if you're outside of Victoria, or +613 if you happen to be in Japan and are very excited about coming up against Honda, or send us a tweet at FNR_radio, Josh.
I haven't seen any negativity about this signing for the A-League, for Melbourne Victory in general, but I have seen a little bit of negativity out there online today about this marquee fund and the fact that FFA and Fox Sports are contributing to, you know, one club's success and not others. So give us a call on 9944 999. How do you feel about the FFA and this marquee fund contributing to a signing for one club for the betterment of the league, of course, but does it create a competitive imbalance in the A-League?
Well, Victory have a natural pull to come play for them. If anyone was going to make the move and will appeal to a player such as Keisuke Honda to come and play for a certain club in the A-League, it'd be Melbourne Victory or Sydney FC. Melbourne Victory needed a number 10. Sydney FC had signed Milos Ninkovic. They had signed a guy exactly that in Danny De Silva. They weren't looking at that. Keisuke Honda's coming to Melbourne Victory, the reigning champions, the most successful team in all of Australia, the biggest fan base in all of Australia, genuinely going to play in front of big crowds no matter what. He fills a role on the field as a number 10. He's a marquee. I could keep going through lists. Imagine the dealerships with Honda, like the actual brand Honda. You know, you could be making millions of money out of this. But also, in terms of just how big this is for the A-League, it's the right move from the FFA. They've turned down guys like Essien and Berbatov and Diamanti and all these other guys that they didn't deem worthy of splashing that sort of money on. But they've found their guy now. They've done it correctly because he also appeals to a very high Asian market here in Melbourne. And guys, remember, Melbourne is the sporting capital of the world. He's coming to where you want to play sport. Obviously, maybe people don't think about Melbourne, think about the round ball, but this is what's going to help get Melbourne on the map.
Absolutely. And he's an Asian icon. this guy. He's a Japanese icon. He's celebrity and his reputation, it transcends just football in Japan and across Asia. And we're going to talk to Paul Williams from the Asian Game podcast later in the program, who's going to give us a bit of context about how Honda's brand and his reputation will further Australia's integration into Asia and what he's like off the field as well, where he's at in his career. So a bit of wider context with Paul Williams coming at around the 7 o'clock mark. And we're also, of course, talking about FFA Cup. Bentley Greens will be in action tomorrow night against Wellington Phoenix. That's a really tasty cup tie, and we're going to speak to one of the clubs that it's been most successful from an NPL perspective in this tournament. Bentley Greens head coach John Anastasiadis talked to us a little bit earlier, so we'll play that pre-record later in the program and get his thoughts ahead of this tie against Wellington Phoenix.
Well, it's a really exciting day of FFA Cup action tomorrow night. You look at how important some of these games are for a lot of these A-League teams. Two A-League teams will definitely be eliminated. We'll already join the Mariners in the next stage due to some of these A-League sides playing each other. Just to run through the fixtures, we've got Northcote City versus Devonport City, actually from the Venator Club tomorrow night at David Barrow Stadium, interestingly enough. Gold Coast Knights, another third division team, take on the runners-up Newcastle Jets, who've had quite an interesting preseason. Not many new signings except for Matthew Redenton. Bentley Greens, we said, take on Wellington Phoenix. The Brisbane Roar host Melbourne City. Perth Glory host Melbourne Victory. And the boys from Darwin, Hellenic, take on Western Sydney Wanderers. So a bit of an exciting game up there in the north of Australia. A bit different that we've got a game up in the Northern Territory. But exciting times for the FFA Cup. Who will join them in join those sides that we've mentioned before in the round of 16?
And a real chance for a major coup with Bentley Greens, one of the best sides, one of the best NPL sides across all competitions over the last few years, who take on Wellington Phoenix, the very much unknown Wellington Phoenix, with Mark Rudin having made some key transfer signings, as did John Anastasiadis before the season. So that's going to shape up to be a cracker tomorrow. But we must take a short break, of course. When we come back on the other side, we will be speaking to Melbourne Victory CEO Trent Jacobs about all things Keisuke Honda and Melbourne Victory. This is, of course, Evenings on FNR. We're back very soon.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Evenings here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and across the world. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick DiBarno and Athos Syrianos, and we're delighted to be joined on the line now by Melbourne Victory CEO Trent Jacobs to discuss the groundbreaking, headline-making signing of Keisuke Honda. Good evening to you, Trent.
Good evening. Nice to talk to you.
It is, Trent, and it's Athos here. And firstly, congratulations on the signing of Honda. It's nonetheless a massive acquisition for the club.
Oh, look, it goes without saying how excited we are as a football club to have been able to make what's probably the biggest signing in our club's history across our 13 years. And we believe it's a signing that while it's probably going to have a huge impact, we believe, across the league for a whole host of reasons. We also believe it's a fantastic football decision, and that he's going to hopefully turn the dial for us this season and have us featuring in the top couple of teams again.
Trent, take us back to when Victory first identified Honda as a potential signing. I imagine this pursuit has been going on for quite some time.
To be honest, he was someone we looked at about a month or so ago as a possible prospect. As you would be aware, Japan obviously went through the group stages of the World Cup, so he was involved in the World Cup for longer than perhaps others. So it probably became something that was more of a focus for us across the last 2.5 weeks, and then we've worked on this pretty solidly across the last 2 weeks with his management, and we're just simply delighted that we got to a point across the weekend that we'd agreed terms.
Trent, it's Nick here, and what will Keisuke bring on the field? Is he almost the exact sort of replacement you're looking for after losing a guy like Leroy George, who was so influential last year on the field? Is he almost the perfect like-for-like replacement in terms of what he will bring to the club?
Well, I think that's a question better placed for the head coach, but it goes without saying that He is going to be exciting, most likely down one side of the park for us. He will be, I imagine, in speaking to Kevin, standing over our dead balls and hopefully delivering some fantastic opportunities for those guys that will be in the box in those situations. But look, I think it goes without saying, yeah, what he's like technically. I think what we're most excited about is that he comes to us at the age of 32. He's physically, from what we understand, he's in really, really good shape. We'll get an opportunity to meet up with him, all being well, early next week and evaluate that. But we think that the type of player at the stage of his career, he's going to be a very, very exciting prospect for our members and fans and for everyone across the A-League alike.
And the timing couldn't be any more perfect with Victory once again qualifying for the Asian Champions League. Was the ACL a factor when choosing to go after Honda?
Look, to a degree, yes. But I think first and foremost, it was about, you know, the quality of the player. As Kevin would always say, sort of football first in how we go about our recruitment. When we realised that this was something that we could bring to fruition, and we started to evaluate all the benefits that Keziké will bring to Melbourne Victory, obviously one of those factors was having a plus one player for the ACL. I mean, one of the challenges that ourselves and Sydney and other clubs have had in the past is when you have a full roster of foreign players, that unfortunately you have to leave two behind. So to have him involved in the Champions League is very exciting. It's also something that we've spoken to him about directly, and he's really excited about to see if you know, we can go further than the round of 16, which is the furthest we've been ever before. So you know, he's excited by that prospect. He's excited by the challenge. As you will become accustomed to him listening to him in the media, he's very much about new challenges in his life, and he sees the Champions League as one that is a very exciting prospect for him.
Trent, it's Josh here again. What does this signing mean for Melbourne Victory's brand in Asia? Honda, of course, hasn't played in the Asian Confederation at club level since 2007. So obviously, yep, There'll be a lot of Japanese fans in particular excited to see him back in the Asian Champions League. But what does it mean for Melbourne Victory and getting the Melbourne Victory brand and branching out into the Asian Confederation?
Oh, I think it's a huge fillip for the club. I think As we approach things as a football club, we're all about how we can get better, and we're all about growing. We see football as a code, in this country that's very different to other codes. We have a genuine global footprint as a code, and as a club, we certainly want to capitalise on that further. We want to have an impact in the Champions League first and foremost, but we also want to create bona fide football relationships with different clubs and parties in the Asian Confederate, and we also want to, you know, create that into sustainable relationships into the future. But it's not also just about our club. I think, you know, everyone knows the ambition of Melbourne Victory. We want to lead the way in everything that we're doing, and we hope that's the way it's going to be received in market. But it's also an incredible mark of respect, I think, from Keziké Honda and his management team, that he wanted to come to Australia and partake in the A-League. And I think it's one thing that, firstly, Melbourne Victory members and fans can be really proud of, but also A-League fans around the country can say, yeah, he's a genuine, quality, world-class player that wants to come to our domestic competition. And, you know, I think it's a fantastic signal to everyone around the country and the world, for that matter, that that this is a serious competition, and hopefully we continue to see, you know, the likes of Keziké coming into the league in the future.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio with Nick Tabano, Josh Parrish and Athos Syrianos. We are speaking to Melbourne Victory CEO Trent Jacobs after a very significant day in the footballing calendar with Keziké Honda signing for the Melbourne Victory. And Trent, two more spots still available in terms of visa players for the Victory heading into the new season. Is there any more scope for some new signings coming in under the salary cap?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's something that Kevin will be feverishly working on with Paul Trimboli and our network of parties, certainly around the country and abroad. It's an interesting time globally. You know, there's likely to be a lot of movement with different windows opening or open now. So we would expect that we certainly will be hoping to do some business in that space in the not too distant future. It probably goes without saying that a lot of our time has been taken up across the last fortnight with this momentous occasion for our football club today. But rest assured to our members and fans that we're certainly hell-bent as a football club on delivering the absolute best squad this year. Melbourne Victory certainly wants to go back to being highly competitive and back at the top of the premiership race. And we believe with two high-quality signings we'll do that this season.
There'll no doubt be 30,000 smartphones turning on their cameras as soon as Honda lines up for that first set piece. But in relation to the transfer, we saw the club was also linked to Socceroo Jamie McLaren before the Socceroo made the decision to stay at Hibernians on loan. How close was the club to adding McLaren to the list?
Look, I wasn't close to those negotiations, to be honest. I know that his name was certainly mentioned internally at the club, but I didn't get too close to those negotiations. I'd have to defer to Kevin on that one.
Well, Trent, the signing of Honda will no doubt boost crowds around the A-League and at Melbourne Victory home games in particular. And you must be stoked over the last couple of weeks to have reached a resolution with regard to the north end of the ground being opened up to non-members who can come in and experience an active support atmosphere that they haven't previously had the chance to.
Now, look, we're really excited about that. We, the active supporters or those supporters that want to be called North End standing supporters add such an incredible atmosphere to our match days. And we've been working closely with a number of parties in a leadership group to try and ensure that we create a model where we can sustain growth for the future and enable, as you say, different fans and even different members, should they wish to come down and be involved. And for us, it's about, I think I used that word previously, it's about building something sustainable for the future. And what we would like to see is in time, further growth in that area and the capability of working together with our standing members to deliver something that is truly special. I mean, if we're going to be, the best and we maintain that we're one of, if not the best clubs around the country, then we want the match day experience to be second to none. We also want to be able to bring players like Kesike Honda to our club to experience what's benchmark around the league. So we look forward to continuing to work with our standing members and the leaders of the North End standing and continue to innovate where we can and work with them to bring the atmosphere to the level that we've once experienced previously.
Well, Trent, it's a massive coup for the A-League, a massive coup for Melbourne Victory. Congratulations on this fantastic signing, and thank you for joining us here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
No problem at all, gents. Enjoy your night. Thank you.
Melbourne Victory CEO Trent Jacobs speaking to us about this groundbreaking acquisition of Keisuke Honda, a 98-time Japanese international, master of the dead ball, a fan of the spectacular who's no doubt going to light up the A-League this season.
And scored in the most recent FIFA World Cup. And it's just incredible that he'll be playing on Australian soil. And I just can't wait for that first set piece that he takes. Or whenever he gets the ball within 30 or 40 yards, Amy Park and Etihad Stadium will just hear a chorus of shoot.
Well, just running through Honda's resume in terms of the clubs he's played for, as you said, 98 caps for Japan, 37 goals, three World Cups and goals at each of those, 2018, 2010, 2014. He scored some brilliant goals that 2010 World Cup. One free kick comes to mind.
Master of the Jabulani.
Oh, yes. He really mastered that ball, which really caused a bit of headaches for goalkeepers, which Honda exploited brilliantly. He started his career at Nagoya Grampus in the J-League all those years ago. Back in 2004, he made his first appearance. Moved over to Holland to play for Venlo. He played three seasons there before moving to CSKA Moscow in 2010. After the 2010 FIFA World Cup, he moved on from Venlo. Then he moved to AC Milan, arguably the biggest move of his career. Played four seasons there from middle of 2014 to the end of 2017 before playing a season at Pachuca in Mexico. And now finds himself at Melbourne Victory. Now, watching Keisuke Honda at the World Cup, it showed in his limited amount of time on the field what he can do. Now we get to see him unleashed at really at the highest level of Australian football and see him playing what will probably be a lot of minutes and will be a big part of Melbourne Victory's push for back-to-back championships.
It really speaks to his personal ambition as well. I mean, you look at his Twitter bio and you can see...
Human man.
He doesn't just fancy himself as a football player. He fancies himself as an entrepreneur, as someone who wants to transcend his field and someone who wants to play all over the world. I mean, going to Mexico was a totally unexpected move for him, but he made it work and he drew in a lot of fans at Pachuca. He scored 10 goals, so he had a pretty successful time there. And I think he wants to create something special. This could be the last contract or the last move of his career if he renews his contract.
Before he goes back to Japan.
He was considering retiring at the age of 32 to pursue other ventures in his life. He's got more than just football that he focuses on, but he's decided that the A-League is worthy enough of his time and his talents to make another chapter in his career.
Will you look at, you know, just looking at his Twitter profile in itself, his whole cover photo is a range of him doing a lot of speaking, a lot of charity events, which he takes care of. Obviously, if you go on his website, the KSK Group, there's a lot of things to do. The first thing you see is change the world. He's a guy that obviously has a lot of vision. His bio, as you said, Josh, human, man, educator, social activist, entrepreneur, angel investor, anthropologist, and soccer player comes second last, which is quite amazing. He considers himself more as something more than just being on the field at what he does. He's a guy that's going to come here with a great attitude in terms of what he's going to bring on the field. We've seen a lot of marquees come here and maybe not really look like very invested in the A-League. The A-League chance they had, obviously you saw David Villa stick around for four games, probably the biggest name that's been here since Alessandro Del Piero. We saw how well Shinji Ohno was. Maybe Shinji Ohno had a bit of a discussion to him about the A-League, obviously being former Japanese teammates. But he's a guy that, you know, I remember him playing at Milan about two or three seasons ago under Sinisa Mihaljevic a few years ago. He played a role on the right wing in a 4-4-2. Now, Honda was obviously not the same player. He wasn't, in terms of when he got the ball, he didn't have the same impact. On the left-hand side, there were probably players like Bonaventura, etc., who were playing better football. But he worked harder than any guy on the field. His engine is incredible. Always tracking back and defending, always getting forward and providing an option on the right. He was one of the hardest working players. And incredibly, his last goal for AC Milan was a free kick in his last home game for the club, which sent Milan to a return to Europe in the Europa League. And it was one of the great moments because everyone knew he was going to leave at the end of the season, but he took that chance he had and he scored. I'll never forget just how gracious he was, kissing the badge, you know, so thankful for the spell he had at Milan and for all the managers he worked under in a very tough time for the club, but he stuck by them very loyally until his contract expired. And I have the utmost respect for him because I think he's one of the great players to ever come out of this confederation and probably one of the, probably easily in the top five, I think, ever in Japanese football, and probably, if not maybe the best, along with a guy like Nakata, Shinji Kagawa, you'd put him in that same sort of bracket, definitely.
Mm. Well, he's certainly in the highest of football echelons, that's without a doubt. And we will be talking Honda right throughout the night. And you are more than welcome to join in the discussion, 9944 999903, if you're outside of Victoria, or +613 if you are outside of Australia. You can also tweet us at FNR_radio. And this is what Ivan has done, and he has said, first things first, every Honda dealership in Victoria should be sent out a signed and framed Honda Victory shirt to display in the showroom. Wouldn't that be great?
I'm not sure how Hyundai would feel about that.
Yeah,
it's a good marketing suggestion from Ivan.
Not bad. Talking about Melbourne Victory now, just focusing on the team as a whole. So, obviously, they lost a lot of players. They've now brought in Storm Rue, Corey Brown, Nick Ansell, Jordan Niedermeyer, and Keisuke Honda, but still have a few gaps to fill. They haven't brought in a replacement for Bessar Berisha just yet. They probably haven't really fully addressed their centre-back issues after losing Donaghy and also Reece Williams, only bringing in Ansell. Can we see the Victory going after a few more players in the next few weeks? And if so, who would be some targets? Obviously, a striker and a centre-back are the first positions that come to mind, and maybe even some full-back depth. Guys, what do we think?
Well, as Trent Jacobs alluded to, the Victory are not done spending just yet, and you would assume that he did say that Jamie McLaren was mentioned internally at the club, so a striker is definitely on their mind and will be high on their priority list.
But do we have any names that you guys can think of?
Not off the top of my head, but definitely having Honda there would be a pull to recruiting any striker around the world at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think knowing that you've got that service coming from Keisuke Honda as well as Barbarossa and Troisi, that's a pretty formidable attacking front three in behind a striker in Musket's preferred 4-2-3-1. I don't think Honda will play as a false nine, even though he has played there in the past for club and country. Mm. Because it doesn't seem very Musket to play with a false nine. You know, Victory used to under Ange, but Kevin Musket swiftly changed that and brought in Besar Berisha. So I think he prefers to play with an out-and-out striker, and if Victory can get somebody in, then Honda will definitely line up in an attacking midfield role.
Well, what I find be quite remarkable is a certain Samuel Eto'o just left his Turkish club.
Well, I think he'd probably be on marquee wages.
I think that would be a tough one. But could you imagine?
He should be a target for Sydney, though.
I think definitely he should be a target by any A-League club that are looking to spend big, and especially, as you said, Sydney FC. But I think that Melbourne Victory definitely need to get themselves a new striker.
I think Samuel Eto'o ending his career in the city and the country in which he won an Olympic gold in 2000 would be a pretty fitting end to his career at one stage, the best striker in the world.
And in relation to A-League clubs signing players, Josh, you made a very good point a few weeks ago, which I wish to resurface. Iran has got an abundance of talent that the A-League clubs haven't tapped into. I really think those type of Asian countries, considering the A-League clubs come up against them all the time in the Champions League, and we know how good they are, surely there is a market up there that A-League clubs haven't tapped into and should tap into, because they fall under the... They don't fall under the foreign players for Asia, so they qualify without taking up one of those spots. And I'm sure they'd be more than happy to come to the A-League. The wages might be the only thing preventing them to come, but there's no reason why we shouldn't be looking at some of our Asian neighbours for quality strikers.
Yeah, absolutely. The other area of world football in which I think Victory should target for a striker is Eastern Europe, because... Yeah. The players aren't as well paid, but they do have quality. And you've seen several players, Adrian Mijajewski for one, come out of that region. Bobo, if you want to include him, he was playing in Turkey. That whole Eastern Europe, sort of Central Asia border region is a rich vein for A-League clubs to recruit from, because the talent is there, but the wages and the conditions aren't always there. And you can offer a lifestyle in Australia that is, you know, simply a cut above. So you can tempt people over. So I would be scouting in Eastern Europe for sure if I were Melbourne Victory.
Well, just looking at some of the free agent strikers at the moment, there are a lot, but in terms of fitting them under the marquee balance in some of these big names like Giuseppe Rossi, Dimitar Berbatov, Samuel Eto'o.
None of those guys
Victor
coming
Victor Anichebe, Gabriel Ogbonlahor, Darren Bent, Lassina Traore, Nilmar, the list goes on. That'd be very hard. Even Emmanuel Manica hasn't even got a squad at the moment. But just having a look at what I believe how Victory at the moment will be lining up, and I think that they should be looking at, obviously, it'd be undisputed that Lawrence Thomas is their starting goalkeeper.
Absolutely.
In right back, Storm Roux. Probably, yeah.
To start with, I wonder if
Thomas Deng maybe
might play there. I think he's better as a centre-back, but if Ansel and Niedermeyer are to line up at centre-back, it has a flow-on effect, and you probably want to start Thomas Deng no matter what. So depends on how Storm Roux goes at his new club.
Well, you've got Corey Brown as well in left-back. So
he is nailed on. Yeah.
I think Corey Brown in left-back, and I think
so
Thomas Deng.
No Lee Broxham at left-back?
Nah, I think Brox will have to settle for a spot on the bench, unfortunately, for his sake, because I think Carl Valeri and Terry Antonis definitely will find themselves holding down the fort. Potentially even Josh Hope. I reckon he's going to get a few minutes this year, and I reckon he's a guy who might have a breakout season.
He is the great White Hope.
His last season now, Victory was probably touted to move on at the end of last season. Surprisingly, signed a new deal with the club.
Well, he's such an important leader. It's more than what he just does on the field. He obviously struggled at times last season, but in the finals campaign, he lifted. Terry Antonis, obviously, is a nailed-on starter, but I think Josh Hope is probably the third option.
I'm excited
in
for Antonis. I reckon he's going to have a big season.
Well, if it's anything like his game against Sydney FC.
Or anything like his game against Port Melbourne Sharks the other night, where he scored a hat-trick in 4 minutes.
Just what he showed prior to all those injuries. He made the Asian Cup squad, remember that? They were part of that Asian Cup squad that won the Asian Cup. He's a quality player that I think definitely could have another big season. I think as a number 10, you'd have to go Keisuke Honda.
Absolutely.
I'd say on the left-hand side, you push James Troisi up to a left-hand side, the right Costa Barbarousis. At the moment, the striker is Big Ken, King Kenny, who'll be loving this, because at the moment, he's probably thinking, I'm still the man at the moment, that I'm going to lead the line. But I think that there'll be definitely someone else being brought in. I can't see Victory sticking with just having one striker. You've still got other names in the squad, such as Jyingham, Birkin Carter, you know, new signing from the youth squad in Nick Seti. So there's a few young guys in and around that, but I think they're going to add a few names, whether they be local products or international.
Well, there's plenty of attacking talent in the NPL. I think Victory will be looking for a more experienced option to complement Kenny Athew as the super sub. But there are NPL products that we've talked about.
Well, Jordan Murray just signed for Central Coast Mariners today.
Jordan Murray, the top scorer from Appia Leichhardt Tigers, who scored a record-breaking 23 goals in 19 games during the 2018 NPL New South Wales season. He's been snapped up by Central Coast, as has another exciting attacker, Josh McDonald from the Wollongong Wolves. So they've both picked up one-year deals at Central Coast. There's always Brandon Barnes you could turn to at NPL level.
I don't think Brandon Barnes is the guy Melbourne Victory will be looking for straight away, but definitely a guy like, Jordan Murray. Jordan Murray signing for the Mariners is a great acquisition in terms of some of these A-League talents that teams should be looking out for, but definitely I think Melbourne should be looking to bring in two guys underneath that visa spot, so they can pinch another Asian talent that maybe we don't know about that's potentially flying away in Iran. Mm. Just on your point about Iran, I think the best Iranian players are all now playing in Europe in some of those big leagues, and they're going to be hard to get across. I don't know about the quality of the Iranian league. That's the only worry.
They have
for
some
me.
Big teams. Persepolis, for one, is
I just
very
think
team.
That they wouldn't want to come and play in Australia. If they're earning big bucks over in Iran, it's going to be hard to get them to come and play here. It's a big move from Iran to Australia.
Yeah.
It's not like it's going from maybe Japan to Australia or China to Australia.
I think you're more likely to get somebody from Southeast Asia.
South Korea, China, Japan, one of those.
I think even Thailand or Vietnam have some good players you could have a look at.
Well, they're building a fantastic football program there, as we've heard so often. The Southeast Asians are coming right up. They're following the Japanese model, and they'll be certainly a force to be reckoned with. But we, of course, must take a very short break. And when we come back, we'll still be continuing our chat of Honda. But we might take a slight detour, as there is FFA Cup action very soon. We caught up with John Anastasiadis earlier this afternoon, and we'll hear that after this very short break on Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good evening, football fans, wherever you might be listening across Australia and across the world. This is FNR Football Nation Radio. Evenings with Josh Parrish, Nick DiBarno and Athos Syrianos. We have had a huge show so far talking about the biggest signing in maybe A-League history. Get at us on Twitter if you disagree. Maybe Alessandro Del Piero
I'll
is up there.
Get out of you in the studio, Josh. I still don't agree with you on that.
I think that because Honda is coming here at 32 rather than
38
years old.
Look, big difference is Del Piero, bigger household name around the world.
Sure.
But in terms of quality of what he's going to do on the field, I think Honda will probably do a bit better.
There you go.
But then again, though, Del Piero was pretty good. At 38 years old, he was still killing
it. He still dominated. I remember a couple of those free kicks he scored.
Do you just remember that game against Wellington where he literally took the absolute mickey out of them?
Did he score a hat-trick that game?
Yeah, but he was just walking. Like, he didn't have to, I don't think he ever broke into a sprint at Sydney, but he scored so many goals.
I remember something he said after a game. He said, Australian players run too much and think too little, which was a bit of a wake-up call for all of us. But he did dominate the league. I don't think the league was as good back then. It was there wasn't as much pressing involved. It wasn't as high quality as it is
24, now. 24 goals in 48 games at the age of 38 is still impressive. But
nothing,
as you said,
half a goal a game, that's a decent
average. Very, very good very good return from a guy like Del Piero. Obviously, wasn't with a great Sydney FC team at the time as well, which does obviously say a bit about Sydney. But look, in all fairness, though, Del Piero, I think for me, still goes down as one of the best players we've ever had come out. We had this discussion a while ago about the best marquees, and I think Honda definitely falls under that same bracket. David Veer obviously was here for four games. He was probably at the peak. If you want to talk about players at their best, at the time, David Veer was probably the best because of how good he was.
He never wanted to be here, though.
He never wanted to be here, but when he was on, in terms of what he could
played
do,
well.
He
played well. My friend lined up for a selfie with him at one of those public events, and he had it as his Facebook profile picture for several months there. And David Veer's face, he said it all. He was totally grumpy. My friend had the biggest ear-to-ear grin, and he was just scowling at the camera. And you could tell New York City FC did not explain this part of the deal to me.
Well, please let us know your thoughts on who the greatest A-League marquee is now that Honda has signed 9944. 0499 0903. My favourite, as it has been very well documented on this program, has always been Mark Yanko, just based off the quality that he's done. I'm not saying he's the best. He's been my favourite.
His goal return was phenomenal,
He went back to Europe after a season at Sydney FC. He was phenomenal. But a team who scored a lot of goals on the weekend and conceded equally as many was Bentley Greens, a 4-4 draw with Kingston after being down 4-2 and now face the Wellington Phoenix on Tuesday night in the round of 32 FFA Cup clash. We're caught up with the head coach, one of the greatest coaches in Australian football, John Anastasiadis, early this afternoon to see how Bentley will tackle the Wellington Phoenix.
Thanks for joining us, John. Let's start with the game over the weekend, 4-4 against Kingston. When you were down 4-2, what were your thoughts during the game and of the comeback in general?
Yeah, look, we started off extremely slow and we got punished for that. We conceded a couple of goals, which is very childish-like. Second half, much better reaction. We scored a couple. Could have had a fifth. And then they were unlucky not to get a penalty decision, which was a penalty. And on top of that, they hit the post in the last second. So, it was a crazy game and could have gone either way. But we've got to be better than that, especially in the start of the game, where you're down 2-0 in the first 20 minutes. It's an uphill battle after that.
John, it's Athos here, and of course, playing on the Friday means that you guys get the weekend to, resettle and all that. Have you seen the players over the weekend to see how they're tracking and how they've pulled up?
Yeah. We had Saturday. We had a recovery session, and we went through analysed Wellington, and today we've come in to see how we will set up for tomorrow's game. It was a very light session. And I've seen, all the boys were, I believe, were professional enough and to sort of, look after themselves over the weekend, not do anything silly, and get ready for a big game tomorrow.
John, it's Nick here, and obviously you guys have got a bit of a trend in the FFA Cup of being one of the best performing state league sides and heading into another FFA Cup journey. What's it like being one of the obviously those state league teams that really perform quite well in this competition? Have you got that sort of trend that you look to try and keep up? Is it hard to keep it up, obviously having made a semi-final in the past?
Yeah, look, it's not easy to keep that up. I mean, you're talking about players who are, more or less amateurs, and you're trying to... We've brought 9 new players here this year, so I've tried to, explain to them what it means to be a Bentley Greens and be part of this FFA Cup and what we've created over the past 4 or 5 years of the FFA Cup. So the good thing is that the boys who have come in have embraced it, understand where they're at, and they've got to be thinking of on the lines of it's a big club to come to and expect some success. And part of that success is doing well in the FFA Cup. So once you install the culture into them, everything else is quite easy.
We are, of course, speaking to Bentley Greens coach John Anastasiadis, whose side will come up against the Wellington Phoenix on Tuesday night. Now, John, drawing from previous experiences in the FA Cup, are there key elements that you have learned from the previous campaigns that you've utilised this time round?
Absolutely. You always learn from every game you've played. Especially against the A-League club, more or less, that we've learnt a lot from them. And, if you make mistakes against an A-League club, you'll get punished. They don't need much for that to happen. So we've certainly got to be very careful. And, if I take last year's game against West Sydney Wanderers, where, we were probably on top of them the first 15, 20 minutes, and then they had a free kick outside the box. And instead of us setting up quickly, we were looking at the stars. And by the time we knew the ball was in the back of the net, and then it was... uphill battle after that, so we've got to be better than that, and we know that, and you learn from that. So there's no doubt that the past games we've played against A-League clubs have learned a lot, and I think the major fact is you tend to get punished for your mistakes against better opposition.
John, it's Josh here again, and your opposition tomorrow night in Wellington, a bit of an unknown coming into this game. Obviously, they had a pretty ordinary season last time out in the A-League, but they've got a new coach, they've got some new players they've brought in. What are you expecting from them, and how did you go about scouting them, given that they've undergone so many changes over the off-season?
Yeah, look, a lot of people say, oh, it's best time to get A-League clubs and this and that. You know, best time to get Wellington. They're all, they've got problems and whatnot, have you? But the biggest problem is, and the biggest fear I've got is that they've got a new coach. Players have come in. Got some very good signings. Two Polish players, a couple of other boys who've started their stuff in the A-League before with other clubs. So their experience is invaluable. You know, they're going to go out and trying to show their coach, that they're worth to start in this team. And there's no doubt their coach, has come from the NPL, so he wants to prove that, coming from the NPL, coaches or players are worth to be in the A-League. And, I congratulate Mark Rudin for actually coming from the NPL and, seeing me into the A-League, and hopefully the A-League will give more NPL coaches a go. So there are traps there, hidden traps, so we've got to be very careful that we don't get thinking that, we've already won the game, when that's exactly not the case. I think the boys know that this game's going to be an extremely difficult one, and we've got to be at our best.
And as we know, the Bentley Greens currently at the end of their regular season, whereas the Wellington Phoenix are yet to start their A-League season. John, in terms of the pre-season, is there more of an emphasis on the fitness and endurance side of football now that the FFA Cup has been a competition for the last few years?
Are you talking about the A-League clubs?
From your perspective.
Well, from my perspective, I think, because we're at the end of the season, more or less, for us, we've just tried to keep the players as fresh as possible, maintaining them throughout the past, the couple of months. You don't have the hard sessions like you do at the start of the season where you sort of get that fitness level up, get the cave in the legs. But at the moment, we're just, sort of maintaining them and more or less concentrating and working on structure and tactics. And that's what we've got to take into the game on Tuesday.
John, I believe, obviously, you guys have signed Nathan Coe quite recently, a former Melbourne Victory goalkeeper and someone who has performed quite admirably in Europe as well. How important has he been for some of the younger guys in the team, obviously, having sort of that senior experience in such a young bunch?
Yeah, no doubt. Nathan's got so much experience that he's obviously helping out our goalkeepers, because our senior goalkeeper for sure, but he's also helping out the young keepers who are in the under 20s, under 18s. His experience has been sensational, and we've picked his brain a bit about what they do in big games and what they were doing in Europe, and all that sort of information has been relayed to the players. So someone like that around the club is special, and it's fantastic to have him on board, and hopefully we get him for a couple more years. He's actually our second keeper, to be honest. So if our keeper goes down, we've got a fantastic backup.
Absolutely, John. And are there any injuries in the squad at the moment, or are you looking at a clean bill of health coming into this game?
No, clean bill of health. Thank God for that. And Brody Taylor won't be available because he's already cup-tied.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. Sets you in good stead for this one. What will you be sending the players out to focus on? Is it just to play your own game, the normal game, or is there a specific game plan that you've got in mind against this team?
Yeah, look, we've got something in a specific game plan, but we've got to execute it properly. If we do, it will work well. So we'll try that tonight and do some stuff on the board tonight, and then hopefully the boys can do the business tomorrow. We're not going to make it, it's not complicated. It's just a slight tweak, because you don't want to complicate too much, give too much information to the players, because they lose focus after about 5 minutes, so you've got to be careful of that.
Definitely.
And, we just want to give them a little bit of info, just enough to make sure that they're switched on come the first whistle tomorrow.
John, one final question before we let you go. Obviously, winning 10 out of your 12 games at home this year at Kingston Heath, how important is that heading into a game like this against an A-League opposition? Does that give you a bit of extra weight, a bit of extra confidence, considering how well you've defended your home paddock this year?
Yeah, look, I've always been an advocate of a team at home trying to win as many games as possible and having a strong fortress at home. So we've tried to do that this year. We've been successful apart from the two games. We've lost against South Melbourne and Port Melbourne. games we shouldn't have lost, but nevertheless we did. But you know, we tend to know our game, our ground much better. It's a big ground and it suits us to our game style. So there's no doubt that it can play an advantage. But you know, in football today, we know that teams are professional, so they're geared up for things like this. So make no mistake that well done their homework on us quite a few times, but we'll be ready for anything that comes at us.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us here on FNR Football Nation Radio. We really appreciate your time and best of luck for tomorrow night's game.
Appreciate it, boys. Thank you very much.
That was, of course, Bentley Green's head coach, John Anastasiades. They have a big game tomorrow against the Wellington Phoenix. A 4-4 draw on the weekend, coming back from a 4-2 deficit to share the points with Kingston, which means that Avondale jumps them into second position. Bentley Green's now sitting in third. Themselves, Avondale and Heidelberg are, of course, locked into the finals, and it's a case of who will finish where as this season comes to a close.
I think this is the best chance of an A-League versus NPL upset in this round.
Yeah, and I think what I find even more remarkable about NPL Victoria is that Heidelberg had a bit of a hangover from Wednesday, and they lost 2-0 at home against Hume City yesterday, throwing their title celebrations just a week off are probably a bit premature. Obviously, they've still got that game in hand against South Melbourne, which probably in their eyes, if they win, will wrap up the NPL Victoria Minor Premiership heading into the final series.
Well, with that game in hand, they are 4 points clear on top of the table with Avondale and Bentley Greens equal on 49 points. But strangely so, a team that was locked inside the top six for so long in Green Gully is now equal 12th with Kingston City and our only goal difference from the relegation zone.
Yeah, it's looking pretty tight in the mid-table in NPL Victoria. I just wanted to draw your guys' attention to the TPO ranking, something we've mentioned on this show before. We've actually had Jake from TPO rankings on the program, or on the station anyway. And Bentley Greens are sitting just one spot behind Wellington Phoenix. They're in 12th place in Australia and Wellington Phoenix are in 11th. This is, of course, a statistical ranking of all A-League clubs. Heidelberg and Appia Leichhardt are currently sitting above Wellington. So if the TPO rankings are anything to go by, the gap between the very top NPL clubs in Australia and the bottom of the A-League clubs, it's not as big a gap as some people might imagine.
Maybe that just strengthens the argument for a bit of promotion relegation eventually, but that is a discussion for another day. We must keep the discussion rolling about the big news today in the signing of Keisuke Honda, officially signing for the Melbourne Victory. And after the break, we'll be having a very informative chat with the Asian Games podcast host and Fox Sports' own Paul Williams, who'll be joining us after the break, our Asian football expert, with plenty more on the Honda dealing. Back with that after the break here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7 here on FNR Football Nation Radio, and you're listening to Evenings on FNR with Nick Tabano, Josh Parrish and Athos Syrianos. A very exciting day in the world of Australian football after the signing of Keisuke Honda for the Melbourne Victory. And guys, I believe we're joined by a very special guest now.
Absolutely. We have our resident Asian football expert, the co-host of the Asian Game podcast and a freelance writer for Fox Sports Asia, amongst a host of other publications, Paul Williams, on the line. How are you, Paul?
Fair to say I'm a little bit excited, boys. I guess you are the same as well.
Absolutely. And how does it feel to have an Asian superstar finally playing his trade in Australia?
It's a little bit surreal, actually. I'm a little bit like the pig in the proverbial today, to see so much focus and attention on Asian football. It's not normally something that happens a lot. And I got home, I'm halfway through watching the press conference again because I have to keep pinching myself that it's actually happened. And I've got it paused on my screen at the moment, and I've got Keisuke Honda in a Melbourne Victory polo shirt, and I'm just looking at it thinking it just doesn't feel real. It's a momentous day for not only Melbourne Victory. It's a momentous day for, I guess, the A-League's relations with Asia as well, to have the star of the Hyundai A-League be a player from Asia, and probably I guess you could say Asia's preeminent superstar over the last decade, probably of this generation, to be playing his trade in the A-League. It's a huge deal. It's not only a huge deal here, I think it's a big deal back in Japan as well, and it's exciting times.
Paul, it's Athos here, and the timing couldn't be any more perfect for acquiring Honda's signature. The Victory have once again qualified for the Champions League. Take us through how big it will be should Victory come up against a Japanese side. How big will Honda playing in Japan be over there in Japan?
It will be enormous. It will be huge, and it's almost, you know, guaranteed that Victory will draw a Japanese club in the Champions League the way that the draw format works. So you can lock that in now. Who that club will be, we'll have to wait and see how the J-League season unfolds. But, I mean, that'll be massive news when Honda goes back to Japan. I mean, he is a superstar in Japan, and he may not be the absolute peak of his powers. He's only 32. He's certainly not old, but he might not be at the absolute peak of his career anymore. But he's still a big deal back in Japan. And every time he goes home for, you know, to play with the national team, you see that as well. So for him to play a club game in Japan, even though it won't be for a Japanese club, it'll be the first time he plays a club game in Japan since he left to go to Europe. That'll be a massive occasion. And if it's against one of the big clubs in Japan, then it's going to be big. So, yeah, Victory will... they've spoken for a while now of wanting to be, you know, a big club and a big brand in Asia, and they've talked the talk but never really backed that up with any action. They've backed that up with action now. They've got Asia's biggest star in their team, you know, that'll be a help them make a big impact in the Champions League next year, particularly on the park, but especially off the park as well.
Paul, it's Nick here, and take us through what Keisuke is like in terms of him as a person, in terms of what he will bring in terms of his attitude for the A-League. We've seen a few marquees controversially not really having their heart in it at times. And is Keisuke the ultimate professional? I've seen him, obviously, in his days at Milan. Even when he was sitting on the bench, he was always on the field, working hard when he got his opportunity. Can we expect much of the same upon his arrival here in Melbourne?
Yeah, certainly can. As you said, you've seen it before with some marquee players who come here and think they're coming here for a little bit of a holiday and to help build up their bank balance. You won't get that with Honda. He is a superstar, but you can be certain of one thing when it comes to Japanese players and players from around Asia in general, is that they do work hard. And his career has been built on that. You mentioned that just the example before when he was at AC Milan. You know, he might not have got on the pitch as often as he would have liked, but, you know, he was always on the sidelines, you know, supporting his teammates. When he got out on the pitch, he did his absolute best. So he'll work hard, he'll train hard. You know, they're traits that are taught in Japan from a very young age. So you can be certain that he'll do just that. And he's the kind of personality that, you know, the Japanese are very respectful. They're generally a little bit reserved as well. And he's a little bit of an extrovert in Japan because he is so outspoken. He tries to push his teammates on. He's spoken about, you know, wanting to win the World Cup, which is such an outlandish statement for someone from Japan to make. So he is driven, he is motivated, and he will help push on his teammates. It's almost a little bit like Beto Borisa, if you will. He's driven to win. So you'll see that when he plays. So he said in the interview on Japanese TV last week that he wants to go to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics as an overage player and help Japan win a gold medal on home soil. So, you know, that's his target for the next 2 years, to get himself into the position where he can be selected for that team. So there's no doubt that's a huge motivating factor for him. So he's not coming here for a holiday. He'll come here and he'll put in.
No doubt, Paul. And what about that ambition off the field? He's a very fashion-conscious person, we know. I notice he often wears watches on both wrists, yep. So he can get endorsements from two designer brands, I assume. But he's a bit of an entrepreneur off the field. And there were rumours that he was thinking about retiring from football to pursue his other interests before signing this contract. How do you think that has played into his decision to come to a new market in Australia?
Yeah, and just on those watches, obviously he wears, you know, big bulky watches on his wrist. He says he wears two for balance, to help balance his body. I guess he figures if you've got one big watch on one hand, then you're going to be a little bit out of whack. And apparently one is on Japanese time, one is on wherever he's living at the time. So that's the reason behind the two watches. Certainly his brand is certainly going to be important to him, and I've got no doubt that would have been an important part of the negotiations. It's all been well reported of this venture fund that he set up with Will Smith over in the States to help, you know, Japanese companies get their brands into America. He's got a fashion label that he's set up as well. So I've got no doubt all those business interests would have played a part in the negotiations. Who knows, Victory may have got him a spot on the runway at the Melbourne Fashion Festival or something. So certainly that would have played a part, and they'll help support and build those business interests, because as he comes towards the end of his career, football is still the main focus, but he is very much a businessman now as well, and those things become extra important for him. So I've got no doubt we'll see a lot of brand crossovers between Victory and Keisuke Honda.
The voice you're hearing is Paul Williams from the Asian Game podcast and Fox Sports Asia. Honda becomes the 13th player from Japan to come to the A-League. And Paul, do you think that this signing can open the door for Asian players to come to the A-League? Will A-League clubs now be taking a harder look at Asia for players?
You'd like to hope so. I mean, there was talk that, the A-League was going to bring in the plus one rule for this coming season. I still haven't had it confirmed that that is actually in place. The FFA were trying to force it through. The clubs were resisting that move, which I can't for the life of me understand why they would. But certainly if that plus one rule does get introduced, then certainly they're going to have to look to Asia to recruit their players, because either that or they just play with one less foreign player on their books. So I would like to think that this would be help turn that tide a little bit, that clubs will start to look towards Asia a little bit more. And there's some fantastic players that are getting to Keisuke Honda's age that we've come to know over the last few years that have played with national teams that, can be perhaps become gettable. Someone like Yuto Nagatomo, who's played with Honda in the Japanese national team, he's been in Turkey for the last couple of years. He's around that age now as well, that 32, 33, that you could entice them to come in here. If Honda has a great season, he's going to be able to spread that message of how good it is to come here. Then there's no reason you can't get those guys. Maybe Shinji Kagura in a year or two as well. I'm a big fan of Lee Chung-yung from South Korea, who's been on the after at Crystal Palace for the last couple of years, who's on the lookout now for a new club. He's only 30 years of age. Fantastic player, really dynamic player on the flanks, and he would make a fantastic signing in the A-League. I know his preference is to stay in Europe, but he may not have the offers over there. So, A-League clubs could be targeting players like him as well. Masood Shojaei, the Iranian player. I can't understand why clubs wouldn't target these players. You saw the excitement that signing Honda has generated, and how big that will be in Japan. That can be replicated across the continent if clubs are smart with their recruiting. They've tended to ignore Asia and look more towards Europe and South America, and hopefully, perhaps having seen the impact that this signing could have, that may make them turn their attention a little bit more towards Asia and the potential and the stars that are out there for them to get.
Paul, if you had any players off the top of your head in terms of who Melbourne Victory or another A-League club in terms of that are available right now from the Asian market, who should they be looking at in terms of, obviously you mentioned guys like Lee Chung-yong who are on the outer of their European clubs, but are there any hidden talents in amongst Southeast Asia and in amongst Japan and China and the Middle East that maybe if an A-League club could try and persuade to come down and play here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's hidden talent everywhere. I mean, we've played games against Vietnam at youth level, and there's some fantastic players in Vietnam that could absolutely come out here and do a great job. Someone like maybe Tristan Doe from Thailand, I should say, plays in Mung Tong. Cheryl Chapuis as well plays for Mung Tong United. These guys are fantastic, have really built up their careers over the last couple of years. And you look at the success that some of the Thai players are having over in Japan now. Guys like Chanatip and Titaton and Titusin as well. I was calling for these players to be signed by A-League clubs, years ago. And I guess we were probably a little bit ignorant of Thailand back then. But now, they've gone to the J-League and are having great success. And there's players that are still in Thailand that could definitely do a job here. So, as I said, there's plenty of players in Vietnam as well. And as I said, Lee Chung-yong is looking for a club at the moment. So, I'm an A-League club. I'm picking up the phone and I'm ringing his agent to try and get him to Australia, because he would be a super player, incredible talent, and he's only 30 years of age. He's in the prime of his career, he'd be one that's at the top of my list.
Paul, bring the conversation back to Honda. Where does he fit in on the field for Melbourne Victory? Obviously, we know his set piece prowess is amongst the best in the world, but in terms of his position, what's his best spot on the field at his age? He's played in his career on the wing. He's played as a number 10. He's even played as a false nine. Where would you slot him into the Victory starting 11 if you were the coach?
Well, it's interesting because, James Troisi, I guess, has nominally taken that number 10 position. That's Honda's preferred position. And they were a little bit spoilt for choice, Japan, in that they had both Kagawa and Honda two exceptional players, but they both like to play that number 10 role. So often Keisuke Honda was pushed out wide onto either the left or the right flank. So he's capable of playing out there. He obviously prefers to play a little bit more centrally. So with the fact we've seen Leroy George depart, perhaps opens up a spot on that left flank, given that Troisi, as I said, often plays that number 10 role. So unless they're planning on using Troisi in another role, then he could take that number 10 position. But I would imagine, given Leroy George has departed, he's played a lot of his career lately for Japan on that left flank. I imagine that that's perhaps where we could see Honda deployed out on the left-hand side. And who knows how Muskie's going to line up this year. I saw in a pre-season friendly they lined up in a 3-5-2 formation as well. So he's looking to maybe shake things up a little bit this year. But yeah, I imagine perhaps out on the left-hand side with Troisi more centrally is where you'd think it's probably going to go at this stage, because I can't otherwise see where Troisi would perhaps fit into that setup.
It'll obviously be a major talking point coming into this season. But, Paul, one more before we let you go. We've talked about Melbourne Victory potentially drawing Japanese opposition in the Asian Champions League, which is more than likely, given how the draw is set up. Who is the dream draw? Who is the club that would provide a blockbuster occasion for Honda to show off his skills? Is it Urawa?
Urawa would be fantastic. I'm an Urawa fan, so that would be sensational if Victory were to draw Urawa. They're mid-table at the moment, so it's looking perhaps unlikely that they will, unless they have a fantastic second half of the season, they may not get themselves up into the Champions League positions. One that I would love to see is Sanfrecce Hiroshima at top of the table at the moment. I think that would be a fantastic matchup because Best Borussia is there at the moment. So if you had Victory coming up against Sanfrecce Hiroshima, obviously the Honda factor, add that in as well. But for Victory to come up against Best Borussia in the Champions League, as I said, top of the table, so there's a good chance that they'll make the Champions League. Although they do finish champions, it's the way the Champions League draw is structured, it's not possible for them to be drawn with Victory. But if they can drop back to second, then there's every chance they'll be drawn with Victory. And I think that'd be a great storyline, not only Honda going back to play a Japanese club, but Best Art Borussia versus Melbourne Victory in the Champions League, I think would be fantastic as well.
Paul, stop it. The narratives, they're too much. Thank you so much for joining us once again on FNR, Football Nation Radio, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
Paul Williams from the Asian Game podcast, also a freelance football writer for a number of publications, including Fox Sports Asia. We always appreciate his expertise, and he gives it away for free, boys. The A-League clubs, if they're not tuned into this, I don't know what they're doing.
It's incredible when you look at the A-League landscape this time, right now, and compare it to this time last year. The A-League just feels so much more vibrant, doesn't it, these days? Perth Glory and Wellington Phoenix have done excellently in the off-season with their signings. Victory as well, with Honda, one of the biggest players to ever come in. And all of a sudden, 3 months out, you're itching for the A-League to start. You can't wait for that first round of the A-League campaign, which will see not only the Melbourne Derby, but Sydney-Adelaide opens the season, which is at Hindmarsh Stadium and should be a full house. And we know how great that atmosphere gets over there in Adelaide.
I really haven't been this excited for the A-League since about 2014, 2015, when the A-League was really buzzing after the years when Melbourne Victory won the league. I think that season when they won it heading into a 2014, when they just signed guys like Kalfala, et cetera, and they beat the Wanderers 4-1 on the opening day, I was really excited because I thought, big crowd, the A-League's buzzing. It's starting to really push that next level. But the last few seasons, it's sort of dropped off in terms of excitement level. But I feel like this year, with the signing of Honda setting the bar, we saw Tim Cahill come to the A-League and we saw how much that failed. But it didn't really drive the same amount of buzz. It's just this different feeling heading into this season there has been in terms of other seasons in the past. I feel like just having him down here, and a whole range of players have been touted to come in down here, and the extra buzz about Perth Glory signing you guys, Sydney FC, et cetera, so much excitement.
Give us a call, 99944 99999, 03 in front of that if you're outside of Victoria, or +613 if you're outside of Australia. That's 99944 99999. Tell us how excited you are for this upcoming A-League season. Which other marquees would you like to see these clubs bring in? Brisbane Roar in the past few days have been linked with a certain biofuels expert and former Milan midfielder, Nick.
Milan and Arsenal midfielder and Crystal Palace, the resume is long. It seems like all the former Milan players are loving to come to the A-League. But that man is Mathieu Flamini, a former France international as well. A box-to-box midfielder personified, very defensive, very physical, and a guy that I think would add a lot of quality to this A-League. may not be the most flashiest name, but it's just another name out here, another great acquisition for A-League clubs. I would definitely say Brisbane, pick him up. I know he does fit the bill. He's above 30. He's older than 30.
Yeah, he's 34, I think.
He's closing on 35, so it almost perfectly fits in the Brisbane Roar resume. But, you know, I think that if you're going to get someone like Flamini, he'll add a lot of grunt in the midfield. And a guy that can score some goals when on the rare occasion, can put in a killer pass as well. And, you know, he played at the top level for so long, and he'll add a different bit of class that maybe some of these A-League clubs don't have. And I think a worthwhile investment, maybe not from the marquee fund of the FFA have offered, but definitely in terms of getting him as their international marquee would not go astray for the Brisbane Roar.
Well, if the numbers that have been revealed are correct, it would indicate there is still 1.4 million available to A-League clubs in the FFA marquee fund. So there's still a bit of room for these clubs to attract big name players. Would Flamini fall under that marquee fund, or would he fall under the more so Brisbane Roar's international marquee?
I don't think he should. Whether he does is up for discussion. Vince Rigari, writing for AOP today, suggested that potentially some of that marquee fund money could go to Matthew Flamini, but I would prefer that that money went to the creative players, the players who are going to score and create goals. Flamini, he's a defensive midfield player. He's a pretty unfashionable, dirty work kind of guy. Class footballer, no doubt. Three caps for France, a long career at Arsenal and Milan and Arsenal again, and yep. Marseille, Crystal Palace. I only played 8 games for Getafe last season, but, you know, still playing at the highest level. I'm not sure that's the best use of those funds.
And Vince Rigari has reported today that despite turning down the Roar earlier in this transfer saga, he has had a change of mind. And one of the big pulls to him to come to Australia is the potential opportunity to expand his business interests. Australia is an open market for his company, a biofuels company, GF Biochemicals, which has you know, plants in the US, Italy, and the Netherlands, and it's a great chance to expand into Australia.
It's the first company in the world to produce something called levulinic acid, first company to mass produce it, rather, which apparently could solve all of our fossil fuels problems. Imagine if Matthew Flamini is the man to save the world from climate change.
Could
what a
you
twist.
Imagine? That would be an awesome Hollywood movie. And Matthew Flamini plays himself. I would love that. And he's one of the guys I used to find myself cursing at the TV a little bit, because he sometimes played a lot of sloppy football, but if he saves the environment, definitely a lot of those, I'll have to take back a lot of those words. But in terms of using that money, that $1.5 million, if I was to pick one player, guys, before we go to a break, I'm going to go around the room here and ask you guys as well. If I was to pick one player to get out here, I'd be saying get Samuel Eto'o. Get him here to Sydney FC for one season. I would love to see Samuel Eto'o play. I reckon it'd be great. You have Eto'o at Sydney, Honda at Victory, Flamini at Brisbane. You have all the big guys out here. And you know what? For that sort of money, you could get him here. If it's not Samuel Eto'o, I'd be saying go get Giuseppe Rossi.
Oh, I agree with that. I think Eto'o is the name that's out there on the free agent market who would draw crowds. Just a huge name in football. Barcelona legend, Cameroon legend, one of the best strikers in the world on his day. And he just that poetry, that symmetry of coming back to the city where he won that Olympic gold in 2000 with Cameroon, which was an unbelievable triumph. Let's not forget they were huge underdogs in that tournament. Would be a fantastic postscript to his career to finish it in Sydney.
And he's one of the youngest players to play and score at a World Cup, I believe. I think at just 17 years old. So he's had a marvellous career. I would have really loved to see us in Australia have a real go at Fernando Torres.
It's slipped through the fingers now.
Eto'o is the next best thing, and he'd be fantastic, considering he's played with some of the likes of Ronaldinho, Messi, Deco. He's played with the whole range of talent, and having him line up, whether it's at Sydney or at any other A-League club, would be sensational.
Well, I honestly think if it's not him, as I did allude to, Giuseppe Rossi is a guy they're going to go for, because he's an absolute talent when he's fit. A guy that probably was one of the unheralded talents of Italian football that just couldn't get his body right. I would love to see him come play down here in the A-League, whether it be for that $1.5 million. But Samuel Eto'o would be poetry in motion, in my opinion.
Giuseppe Rossi, does he draw the Italian crowds in? Is he a big enough name?
Italians love him, but he's the guy that just got away. You know, there's always that one talent that got away. There's been so many throughout the ages of football, and if he kept his body fit, he probably still would be playing for some of the biggest clubs in Europe right now. And it's a shame that he had all those injuries in the last 5-6 years. It wasn't allowed for him to get to the peak of his potential for the national team as well. Didn't go to any Euros, no World Cups. Went to one Confederations Cup, I believe, in 2009 or 2013. That was about it.
It's a bit of a sad story, really. Giuseppe Rossi, so much talent unfulfilled. But he would obviously be a class addition. I suspect he'll want to go back to America because he has family connections there.
That's where he was born.
I believe he was born in the USA. So he could have represented them internationally, obviously chose Italy over America. But surely a move to the MLS makes more sense for Giuseppe Rossi at this point in his career.
Definitely. And he did say in an interview that he's actually lost count of the amount of knee injuries he's had. And we've seen so many of those stories where players just can't seem to get their body right. We've seen it here in other codes, in especially in football, where you see guys that just can't seem to get over those ACL injuries. And he's a guy that just seems, as I said so many times, get that body right. In his career, he goes down as one of the best strikers to ever come out of Italy.
Well, at 31, he's had spells at Manchester United and all over Italy, Levante. At
Villarreal, he was at his best.
Villarreal, I believe was he at Genoa? Is that
he was at Genoa most recently, but he's run at Villarreal one season. He was scoring 18 goals in the season. He had some 11, 12, 10, and ever since 2011, he's very rarely been able to string together a lot of football because he had that many injuries. He had one season at Fiorentina before the 2014 World Cup where he scored 16 goals in 21 games, and it was his last-ditch push for the World Cup, but then got injured at the end of the season, which saw him miss the Brazilian World Cup, which was a major shame.
Well, of course, you can join in the discussion anytime and let us know which player you'd like to see the A-League club's target to fit under that FFA marquee fund, 9999 9903 if you're outside of Victoria, or tweet us at FNR_radio. We're going to take a very short break. Still to come in the show is our Fantasy Premier League preview, or that segment.
Mm-hmm. Strikers now.
Strikers we're looking at.
Well, we're not going to also forget about that 3-league start on the weekend. We did our preview of them. Now we're going to do a bit of a mini review of those 3 leagues because there was a lot of exciting action happening from Championship to League 2. So get yourself strapped in, guys. We're heading over to England after the break. Plenty more here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
A big thank you to the Lanco Group and DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants, our two major sponsors for Evenings on FNR. They keep us well fed and on air here at FNR, so a big shout out to them. Before we move across to the UK, where I think Wigan had a decent game, and a very exciting news coming out of South Australia with the Nine News, the Nine Network and Football Federation of South Australia are being very proud to announce a new 3-year partnership. So in the coming weeks, results of the men's and women's NPL finals will be featured on Nine News on Sunday evening. So great to see the NPL coverage the NPL competition getting some coverage there. And over in New South Wales, remarkably, top of the table Apia had a fantastic results against Bonnyrigg, defeating Bonnyrigg 6-3, and Bonnyrigg also accumulating 3 red cards in that game. So a very hectic afternoon over there, which means that Apia remain on top with 45 points. But Sydney Olympic, with their 4-0 win over Wollongong, coming hot at their heels, 45 points as well. And there's a 7-point gap between themselves and Sydney United on 38 points. So the NPL competition in New South Wales is heating up, but it's not often that you see a 9-goal game and 3 red cards in the one match.
Unbelievable, Athos. And speaking of red cards, the Newcastle Jets forward Roy O'Donovan has come out and made some comments about his 10-game ban that he received for that challenge on the Melbourne Victory goalkeeper Lawrence Thomas. He says, "I take full responsibility for making the challenge, but I made the challenge from a good place, not with any malice or intent. It is very hard to come to grips with the way I've been portrayed. I don't portray myself to be any sort of angel. I play the game hard, but I play the game fair. The way I've been portrayed is hysterical, ridiculous, and totally out of context to what actually happened," he told the Newcastle Herald. Guys, Roy O'Donovan, not pleased about the press surrounding him and his lengthy ban from the game after that pretty sickening studs up blow to Lawrence Thomas's face.
Oh, it's still going on, this discussion. I still think that take the ban, Roy, just get it out of the way. You'll be back in 10 games time. Newcastle will have to start a little bit. What's the right word here? little bit without many striking options.
Short-handed
up front. Short-handed up top without a real prolific striker heading into the new season, obviously. No more Andrew Naboo. So they've got to start with a whole new look up top, and they've only made one new signing ahead of the new season thus far. So maybe they might duck into the marquee bid and marquee fund, and we'll see how they go.
Well, boy, we teased it before the break. Shall we get stuck into the football league?
Yes, I think we should. I've been waiting for this for quite some time. And let's start over in League 2. Now, there was a big result. My boys, the Shrimps and Morecambe, got smacked 6-0 by Crew Alexandra. And they were my tip to potentially stay up this year. But their season has got off to really the worst possible start down in League 2 as well. MK Dons with a 2-1 win over Oldham. So your boys, Josh... they beat another one of the relegated sides and they get their season off to the perfect start.
You know who else had a great start? Forest Green, the Vegans.
The Vegans. They beat Grimsby.
The 4-1 win over Grimsby Town. So that's a fantastic result. Grimsby tipped to at least, you know, touch the promotion places, if not, you know, get much further than that. But Forest Green, they only came up last season, I believe, or the season before last, they were promoted from the conference and they played their first season in League 2 last season. So they're looking to consolidate their position. And it seems they do have enough protein in their ranks to be a force to be reckoned with.
Their iron levels are still sufficient. So looking at some of the other results, Stevenage and Tranmere was a 2-2 draw. Mansfield 3-0 over Newport County. Lincoln City 1-0 over Northampton, one of the sides we picked for promotion this year. Got themselves off to quite a good start against one of the relegated sides.
It's their biggest signing of the preseason was getting the Cowley brothers back on another extended contract.
So wonder if their goals from a set piece.
It's not pretty, but it works. And they have a very settled squad at Lincoln City, so I expect them to be challenging for an automatic promotion spot.
Harry Kuehl's Mob, Crawley Town, 1-0 winners over Cheltenham. They get their season off to the perfect start. Bury with a 1-0 win over the best name in football, Yeovil Town. Bury get their season off to a great start after being relegated from League One, a disastrous season for them last year. Notts County 0-0 with Colchester. Notts County, one of the promotion fancies, could not get over the line. Port Vale 3-0 over Cambridge United. Robbie Williams must have a big smile on his face after that result. Exeter City 3-1 over Carlisle. And finally, Swindon Town with a 5-goal thriller against Macclesfield, winning 3-2. A hat-trick coming from Michael Doughty with 2 penalties in the 90th minute being the difference maker.
Yes, our pal David Squires at The Guardian would be very pleased with Swindon getting 3 points on the board so early in the season.
And Macclesfield Town, I believe one of the promoted sides from the National Leagues, they'd be absolutely gutted conceding 2 penalties in stoppage time, which has seen
96 and 98th minute as well.
Seeing them lose in the, you know, after almost winning so comfortably. But League One also had some interesting results, Nick. Have we got those in front of us at
yes,
the moment?
Yes, we do. And Sunderland have kicked off their campaign in the best possible way. A 2-1 win over other promotion fancy Charlton, a late winner from new signing Lyndon Gooch, one of the best names in League One football, has got himself the winner. Doncaster Rovers. Now, this is not Doncaster Rovers from up in Manningham.
No.
They got a 3-2 win over Southend United. Barnsley, perfect start to their League One campaign after being relegated, a 4-0 win against Oxford United. So a good start for Barnsley in their push to get promoted. And your boys, Athos, Accrington Stanley, got themselves their pants pulled down with a 2-0 loss against Gillingham at home. Not a good start for them. Scunthorpe United 2-1 over Coventry. Wimbledon, Josh, 1-0 win over Fleetwood Town on the road. Great start for AFC Wimbledon.
Over Joey Barton's boys, Fleetwood Town,
as
well.
I wonder what training's going to be like for those poor Fleetwood players. They're going to get punished.
I said earlier on this program that I think Mourinho will be sacked by the end of November. I think the same might be said for Joey Barton. It could go very, very badly from here.
Definitely. And Walsall, 2-1 winners over Plymouth Argyle. Wickham, the newly promoted Wickham Wanderers, 0-0 with Blackpool at home.
In that Plymouth Argyle Walsall game, Ryan Edwards, the Australian, got on the score sheet, but they unfortunately
very
went down 2-1.
Unfortunate for them. Portsmouth, 1-0 winners over Luton Town. So Portsmouth looking to get themselves back into the championship. And Burton Albion, relegated to League One, been really poor at the transfer market this year. Went down 2-1 to Rochdale at home. Peterborough, 2-1 winners over Bristol Rovers. And Bradford City, 1-0 against Shrewsbury. Good start for those sides in League One.
And you mentioned that Burton-Rochdale game. Brad Inman, the Australian, scored twice to deliver Rochdale
three points.
So fantastic start from him. He's half Scottish, half Australian. He's played some youth football with Scotland, but there's Nothing stopping him from being
called up. I
heard
he's actually been called up by the Australian team already once.
He's been called up to squads. He's never made an appearance at an A-international. So he could be a potential one for the future.
I am excited by Brad Nynum. I remember him being at Crewe Alexandra a few years ago, then had that knee injury, but he was playing some brilliant football in League One. And a guy to definitely keep your eye on. And probably he might feature in a few friendlies leading up to the Asian Cup, and a guy that definitely a lot of Australian fans should be keeping their eye on.
And, of course, moving on to the championship, we saw one of the most exciting opening round finishes with Tom Lawrence needing home the winner in Frank Lampard's inaugural match as manager at Derby County, who defeated Reading 2-1 in the 94th minute. A thrilling finish to the beginning of a fantastic, hopefully a fantastic managerial career for Frank Lampard. Unfortunately, the same can't be said to his old mate Steve Gerrard, who conceded a late equaliser in his opening game for Rangers as they shared the points with Aberdeen.
Yeah, Steven Gerrard already looking like fitting in as a dour Scot with his expression after that late winner. But for Frankie Lampard, the Chelsea connection is already paying off. Mason Mount got in the score sheet in
that
game.
What a performance.
So he's looking like a fantastic prospect out on loan at Derby County, and they've picked up some pretty good signings there, so looking very strong to potentially get promoted this season.
This is a Derby team that had a lot of young kids out there. As we said, Wilson, Mason Mount, a lot of these guys are new names on the block. There were obviously, he had a good mix of veterans, David Nugent leading the line, Joe Ledley played most of the game as well, and also having Richie Keogh and Curtis Davies holding down the fort down back. But Reading just were not able to hold on to their lead. Paul Clement, the former Derby manager, got their side in the lead, but unfortunately for them, they were not able to hang on. In some other results, Bristol City 1-1 against Nottingham Forest as well.
And Andreas Weimann got on the score sheet in that one. Do you remember him?
The former Aston Villa striker.
Aston Villa man before Daryl Murphy equalised in the 46th minute. And there was late drama in the Millwall versus Middlesbrough game, guys. Millwall up 2-0 at home, thanks to Aidan O'Brien and Lee Gregory, both scoring the first half. Then in the 87th minute, Martin Braithwaite, the Denmark international we might remember from the World Cup, scored to what looked like a consolation goal. But George Friend, in the 97th minute, completed
the
comeback.
Definitely was Millwall's friend.
Unbelievable. I think Millwall might be asking some questions of the fourth official there after so much time was added on. But Middlesbrough get a fantastic comeback point in the deep, deep, deep stages of stoppage time.
And also James Meredith, a man who was at the World Cup for Australia, played the full 90 for Millwall as well. Birmingham and Norwich played out a 2-2 draw at the St Andrews as well. A bit of late drama. It was Magoma who had Birmingham in the lead. Hernandez was able to pull one back for Norwich before it was Solomon Alaba, who got Birmingham in the lead in the 89th minute before Hernandez was the villain, getting a late equaliser. So a lot of late drama there. Jordan Rhodes playing his first game for Norwich since moving, a real championship sharpshooter over the years, to say the least, for them. Wigan Athletic, 3-2 winners over Sheffield Wednesday. The only of the ones of the promoted bunch to win. A very impressive performance. A double from Michael Jacobs and a goal from Nick Powell were the difference. Crackers off to a perfect start for Wigan. And you know what? Great start for Paul Cook and Wigan Athletic, as they sit in third after one game. And 45 more to go, but if they can keep getting results like that, I am very, very pleased about their prospects heading into the new season.
And Sheffield Wednesday finished that one with 10 men after a red card in the 90th minute, so it boiled over at the end, Nick.
Yes, but if you want to have a look at some of these stats, Wigan had 21 shots to Sheffield Wednesday's 8. Very impressive from Wigan from the get-go. Considering their starting lineup had 3 new signings who had only signed the day before, which includes Darren Gibson, who was on trial at Wigan for most of the preseason and played a very good game. A lot of people have criticised this move, but actually played really well, along with Anthony Robinson, who was signed on loan from Everton. Reece James, they actually sold to Reece James. This Reece James plays first professional game on loan from Chelsea. And also Cedric Kipre, who they signed from Motherwell in defence.
Athos, I've just had to turn my headphone volume down.
Nick's enthusiasm
when spouting off about the Latics, but result for them. You have to agree.
A fantastic result for Wigan. And elsewhere, the newly relegated Swansea City got off to a good start, defeating Sheffield United 2-1. And probably the most surprising result of the round thus far has been Leeds United making easy work of Stoke City 3-1 at home. It was over just after halftime with Cooper scoring in the 57th minute to consolidate the win for Leeds United. One more game still to play in the championship opening.
You've missed two of the biggest games, Athos. You've missed easily the biggest boil over. You talk about Leeds United beating Stoke. That's a battle to the promotion fancies. I'm talking about one of the relegation fancies beating one of the promotion
Bolton
fancies.
Bolton defeating West Brom. Or you jumped the gun with Wigan.
Well, no, Bolton.
Yeah, I've missed. So Preston North End defeated QPR 1-0.
Well, you must be looking at the wrong app
and
because, I mean, my
Bolton
order.
Defeated West Brom 2-1. And then, obviously, tonight...
You missed another game. Brentford 5-1 against Rotherham. And Josh has been talking in the praises of Brentford, who have been incredible with their recruiting in the off-season, guys. And they are now top of the league with incredible win over the promoted Rotherham.
They have a very impressive data-driven approach to player recruitment. They tend to offload their best players every season. And they make a lot of money by scouting players better than anybody else in the division. So they could be a dark horse for promotion.
They're always
guys.
Up there. They're always up there.
To be fair, Rotherham don't look cut out for the division.
No.
But let's talk about Bolton beating West Brom for a second.
Definitely. And the guy that scored the winner, Yannick Waldschut, signed on loan from Norwich City, a former Wigan player as well. Getting the winner for them. For West Brom, though, not the start they would have been hoping for. A team that still boasts quite a talented side. Ahmed Hegazi, Matt Phillips, Jake Livermore, Chris Brunt, Kieran Gibbs, Jay Rodriguez, just to name a few. A very solid team that they've still got out on the pitch, but at home at the Hawthorns, were not able to defeat a side in Bolton who are going to probably be down there in the relegation battle. Were very lucky to stay up on the final day last year, and but a good start for Bolton heading into the new season.
I believe they signed their first player for a fee in a couple of seasons.
They've had a lot of financial trouble.
They've had some serious financial difficulties. I think it was Josh McGuinness they brought in up front, and he scored on debut after 18 minutes to send them on their way. A huge result for Bolton, who will be trying to cling on to every point they can get this season. Still linked with Mark Milligan, by the way, who's yet to find himself a club, and he always wanted to move to England. So we'll see if his dream move comes true. But go on, Nick.
But yeah, just talking about the interesting stat about the three promoted sides in Wigan, Rotherham and Blackburn. They were the same three sides they got relegated the two seasons prior. So two seasons prior, Wigan, Blackburn, Rotherham went down. They both, all three of them got promoted, and now they're all here again. And Blackburn, obviously, as I said, 2-2 with Ipswich Town away from home. They were in the lead in the 90th minute, but a late goal to Adun. Danny Graham and Bradley Dack were the goal scorers for Blackburn. As Athos alluded to, Hull City and Aston Villa play off tomorrow morning. As both sides look to kick off their campaigns. Two of the more recently relegated sides from the Prem.
I tell you what, Ipswich fans don't know what they're missing with Mick McCarthy. They never appreciated him there.
I love Mick.
he managed very successfully, very consistently on a shoestring budget at Ipswich Town between 2012 and 2018. The fans never liked him. They didn't like the football he was playing, but he delivered results time and time and time again on very little resources. And I wonder if the fans revolting and getting him sacked is going to come back to bite them this season.
Well, Paul Hurst has come in. He's a super manager by many people's eyes after what he did at Shrewsbury Town. So McCarthy, I think there's one, just before we go to a break, there's one Mick McCarthy video I love. I reckon you would know this one, Josh, when they're cutting along. It's before Wolves were playing once in the Prem, and it's just him standing there looking out, and he just does this suave look at the camera with this cheeky grin, and it's like, it's Pervert Careless Whisper playing in the background by George Michael as well.
That's one of the greatest YouTube creations of all time. I urge everyone to search Mick McCarthy Careless Whisper because it'll brighten up your day. That man can raise an eyebrow like nobody else.
You could have the worst day ever and that would make you smile.
Well, he looks like Bert from Sesame Street, so that always helps.
It definitely. He's a bit of a scary looking guy. I said you'd be a bit scared of him when I was
younger.
Even
when he smiles, it's very scary.
He's a bit of a creepy looking guy, but he's a great manager who's done it all for Ireland, for Wolves, for Ipswich, and as you said, Josh, one of the more unheralded bosses in the football.
Just quickly, was he the manager at Wolves where they gave the celebration of him telling the players off? Was that him?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that was a different coach. That might have been Phil Brown.
Phil Brown was Hull City.
Hull City, okay. I think that might have been at Hull City, actually. But he was the manager of Ireland when Roy Keane stormed out in 2002 at Saipan. So he's seen it all in his career. And I wonder where he's going to wash up next because he's going to be a... he's going to punch above his weight wherever he goes. I really rate him as a coach.
Before we go to a break, there are two games in midweek being played. Nottingham Forest take on West Brom and Middlesbrough against Sheffield United before another huge weekend of games, which are headlines by Derby hosting Leeds United. Huge round of football coming up in the Championship and around England as the Premier League does kick off next season.
They certainly make these teams earn promotion, don't they, with the amount of games they play.
It's crazy.
If you want to get promoted, you have to, you know, really, really
It's the hardest leagues in the world to play, and we have to play 46 games in one season. It's
plus
physically
cup games,
the hardest, for sure.
You need to have a big squad. You need to really rotate your players. You know, if you don't have the squad depth, you're really going to struggle.
That's why I'm so keen to see how Marcelo Bielsa goes. He had a fantastic start. Stoke were overwhelmed with the interchanging of players in the front third with their relentless pressing and energy. But are they going to be able to keep that up for a 46-game season? I'm not sure.
They'll start really hot leads, but I reckon that they might find a bit of a rough patch.
It's what happened last year. They were in the promotion, I think, come the seventh game of the season and only won 4 out of their last 22 games, which saw them finishing in 13th. And for a while, they were looking like one of the sides to get promoted. And you'd hate to see a repeat considering, you know, how proud of a club Leeds are.
But, guys, before we go to a break, have you guys seen the lineup Stoke played this morning? It was remarkable the amount of talent they had out there. Jack Butland, Eric Peters, Bruno Martins-Indy, Ryan Shawcross, Bauer in right back, Joe Allen, Ndiaye, Akebo, the new signing, James McLean, Benika Fobi and Tom Ince, with Bojan Kerkic, Darren Fletcher, Peter Crouchell coming off the bench, with Ashley Williams and Mame Biram-Diouf as well on the bench for the side. Incredible amount of talent at their disposal.
It's a testament to the work that Bielsa has been doing in pre-season with Leeds. We all know he's a bit of a mad genius. He's a bit obsessive-compulsive in his approach to things. But he's had beds installed next to the training ground so the players can have siestas in the afternoon. They could do morning and night sessions. He made the players pick up rubbish for 3 hours because he worked out that the average person in Leeds would have to work 3 hours at their day job to buy a ticket to a game. So he wanted the players to realise what it meant to the fans to be able to come and watch their team and how much work they put in. So he said, you're picking up rubbish around the training ground for 3 hours just so you know what it means.
How much rubbish could there be to have 3 hours worth? That's something we'd see out of Rocky Four, type of training.
It is Leeds, so probably a lot.
Do you reckon that the executives at FNR could install some beds here for us? We do some long days sometimes. But anyways, guys, look, we're going to take a short break here on Evenings on FNR. After the break, we finish off our FPL Fantasy Premier League wrap-up heading into the new season, and we'll look at the strikers to get ahead of the new season. Back after this on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Good evening for the final time here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. Tonight it is 51 minutes past 7 on a Monday and we still have our Fantasy Premier League segment to come, gentlemen. Josh Parrish, Nick DiBarno and Athos Syrianos in studio, of course. Boys, what are we looking at this week?
Strikers, the powerhouses that you got to
look
at.
The goal scorers.
The guys that are going to get you the points. There's a few guys that, you know, you can always go around. I think the structure you got to go with your strikers, you get 3 options. You got to go to the big gun. The real big gun. Your second guy, if you can fit him in, is a little bit cheaper, but will have a similar sort of output. And then the third guy is your promoted striker. That's
a good way of putting it. That's exactly what I've done.
You got to pick your cheap guy that's going to get you big points. Now, the few guys that I think you got to go for as your number one guy is either Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from Arsenal. If you want to stick patient with Harry Kane, because he starts season slow, but he will give you reward when the season, you know, ticks over. Jamie Vardy or Sergio Aguero. I think Romelu Lukaku is completely out of the picture in this because, once again, he won't give you the output because he will just not score in some of the big games.
What's interesting about this year's strikers option is the pool is actually quite shallow in terms of out-and-out stars, but we'll start on the promoted striker that Nick has suggested is part of that winning formula. I've gone for former Bristol City striker Bobby Reid, was signed for Cardiff. He's very, very cheap, 5.5, scored 21 goals in all competitions last year for Bristol. And, you know, if all things go right, could continue that momentum for Cardiff this season.
I think you get someone better than that, Athos. Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, I've gone with Jimenez personally at Wolves because he'll have great service from that midfield. They've signed so many star players. Ruben Neves still at the club, of course, João Moutinho, amongst a host of other tasty-looking players like Diego Jota. I think he's going to get great service, and if he can get the ball on Raul Jimenez's head, he's going to score you goals.
Well, the other guys I want to look at in terms of that you could get in, there's 2 Fulham strikers I'm looking at. Alexandra Mitrovic at 6.5 million is one guy that definitely I have got as my third striker. It's either him or Jimenez. But I'm leaning more towards Mitrovic because I just think the end of the season he had at Fulham and the World Cup he had for Serbia was quite first class. And his nice partner. Now, I'm not going to pick him up. I just love his analogy. Camara, AK-47, as he's known. Number 47 from Fulham with the initials AK. He's a guy definitely who will probably fall under a lot of people's bracket because, you know, he's a cheap striker, 4.5 mil, has a great name, has a great story behind him.
I don't know if he'll play that many games. It's just the problem.
Because AK-47.
Yeah, you've got to mention him regardless. I think Ashley Barnes could be an interesting option at Burnley. They always punch above the weight. He's not a fashionable striker, but he does score quite a few goals for them, and he gets assists as well. So he could be one to look at if Burnley are having another fantastic campaign. He's only 6 million. He could be one to keep your eye on, as could Callum Wilson from Bournemouth, who, as we know, had that serious injury a couple of seasons ago, but he's coming back strong now. He's got oodles of pace, and Bournemouth, you know, they do play attacking football. So Callum Wilson, keep your eye on him at 6 million as well.
I think as well you've got to keep your eye on, this will be a bit of a controversial one, but I think considering Chelsea haven't signed these strikers, you've got to still keep your eye on Alvaro Morata at 9 million. Bit expensive.
He's got to score eventually.
But he will play. At this point in time, he's going to be their number one man up top. They did miss out on Gonzalo Higuain, so they're going to have to start looking around for a new striker eventually. At the moment, though, Morata is their undisputed striker, and I think he's definitely going to lead the line heading into this season, considering they haven't got anybody else. A couple guys I think that you've got to avoid. As I mentioned, Romelu Lukaku, do not get him in. That's my mantra. You can't get Lukaku. I'm a bit worried about Alexander Lacazette as well from Arsenal. I think that if...
with Aubameyang in there, it's going
to
be
difficult. Yeah, with Emery there, unless he wants to play Aubameyang out wide, but I think you're not using him to the best of his potential, not playing him there. The other one as well, who's quite high up in terms of stats, is a Jose Perez, another guy to really not get because Newcastle have just announced they've got Salomon Rondon all but signed. So Perez's minutes will decrease. And once again, very inconsistent striker, guys.
Yeah, I think the others to stay away from, even though they do score a lot of goals, are Sergio Aguero and Gabriel Jesus, just because at this point in the season, you don't know who's going to be Pep Guardiola's preferred option, and he may want to rotate the two of them. Aguero, of course, over the weekend, did score two goals in the Community Shield, but I'm not sure if they're going to play both of them up front, one of them maybe Jesus out in a wide role, or whether it's going to rotate. And you want someone who's a nailed-on starter week in, week out for that expensive option. So I wouldn't go with a Man City player.
The player I have gone for my expensive option and have got him as my captain is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He seems to be all the hype at the moment. And with Emery, their new manager, we saw how well he played when he arrived at Arsenal. And you would imagine that with a full preseason under his belt that he could take it to new lengths. Harry Kane is yet to score in August, but you'd think maybe if Tottenham get a few penalties, he might be useful for some points there. But I'm going risk-free with Harry Kane, given he's one of the most expensive players, probably the second most expensive player after Salah at 12.5. Aubameyang, only the 11 million is, a safer option.
Only.
Well, in comparison to his
as your marquee signing, I think Aubameyang is probably the player to look for. So, he had pretty electric 6 months for Arsenal, went under the radar because they weren't in contention for anything
about
in particular.
Arsene Wenger at that time as well. But one guy I think we have to not go for, and the man to my right here has been saying, got to get him, he's a gun. A lot of people have been, is Marko Arnautovic. I know he's 7 million.
He's a Chris Price, he's a great one-on-one player.
He's
a
good player.
The ball in his area, he's going to win it every time.
His consistency worries me.
He's going to score 15 goals this season.
His attitude worries me.
15 goals this season from a winger. How do you know this?
15 goals up.
How do you know this?
Because the second half of his season last...
He was about to leave.
The second half of his season last season was sensational.
He's been linked to a move away.
He's got a better team around him this time around than last season. He is going to score 15 goals this year.
But he's never played with these teammates before. The chemistry is going to be different.
Doesn't matter. It's a better team than what he had to work with last year. He's going to get better service. He's going to be a goal-scoring machine. The only thing that will keep him from scoring that many goals is injury.
Attitude. This is in your mid-range option, or is this your promoted striker?
He's your mid-range option. He's worth 7 million.
That's a cheap mid-range option. I've gone for Bobby Firmino.
Same.
9.5 million, a bit more expensive. Means you have to cut back in other areas of your team. But his
his
output last season in terms of goals and assists was fantastic. Liverpool smashed a lot of teams last season, and he can rack up the points in a single game. You just got to pick when you might select him as captain sometimes, maybe Salah as well. You can go for in that regard. But Firmino, I think, is a fantastic option at only 9.5 mil.
Definitely, and I think that there's some other guys as well that you can keep an eye on. I think Jermaine Defoe at 6 million is one that goes significantly under the radar. I know, Josh, you're giving me a bit of a funny look, but I just think that Defoe has something about him.
I think he's done, honestly.
Josh, you said Honda was done, and then look what happened.
I didn't say that.
You said Honda was past it. So
That is not true, and I encourage people to go back and listen.
Okay.
I didn't say he was past it. I said
you had your worries.
I had my worries ahead of the World Cup.
Okay, I'll reword that.
I said he had to play as a striker, and when he came off the bench, he usually did for Japan. So
now, the other one I think to keep away from, and even though it pains me to say, is Manolo Gagliardini, because he's one of my favourite Italian strikers, just hasn't been able to fully hit the strides at Southampton, but will probably play a lot of football. So
he started well at Southampton.
Started
did he score
very well,
four goals then, in his first two games
but
or something
then he
like
just
that?
Went downhill.
And Southampton are not a prolific team. They don't score goals, so I wouldn't go for Charlie Austin, and I wouldn't go for any of those guys.
Shane Long, all of them.
What about Wilfred Zaha?
I think definitely you've got
7
to keep
million
him, yeah.
is a bargain. I would go for Zaha over Arnautovic, player for player,
definitely.
Any day of the
he'll
week.
He'll definitely stay in the Premier League as well. You would hope, whether it's at Palace or whether it's at another club, remains to be seen. I think Palace have put up quite a hefty price tag on him should he decide to leave. But I agree, he's a sensational player and definitely will be worth getting into your team.
Well, guys, I think it's time for us to depart the FNR studios because we have just about hit 8 o'clock. We must thank all of our guests today. Trent Jacobs, the Melbourne Victory CEO, gave us a brilliant, brilliant summary of this Keisuke Honda deal coming through. Fantastic insights, all the doings of that transfer. The signing of also speaking to John Anastasiadis, the head coach of Bentley Greens, ahead of their FFA Cup clash tomorrow with Wellington Phoenix. Good luck to them. And Paul Williams from the Asian Game podcast and also from Fox Sports Asia giving us the ins and outs of KSK Honda's deal to the Melbourne Victory from a journalistic point of view. But guys, thank you very much for joining me tonight. And from all of us here, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.